Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 51 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. This is officially October 29th, I think we can say. Bitcoin price is just about to hit, it just hit it, hit 100,000 Canadian dollars. As someone who grew up in Canada their entire life, I think it's a pretty big milestone. So that's pretty crazy. Bitcoin price is just rocking. So it's going to be a fun space today. We're going to talk some price action, some other things going on. So I'm really excited for this. I want to give a quick welcome to Bob Van Kirk. I haven't seen you up here on the panel for a while. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning.
You have anything you want to say right now about the price action? You getting excited? You getting ready for this bull run starting?
Price action is just one variable to me. So it's cool, but there's other things to look at too. So I hope we can talk about price, but other things as well.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be hitting a lot of different topics today. I'm getting excited. I think this is my first real bull run that I've been a part of. I haven't been in quite 4 years yet, and so this is fun for me. But while everyone's still waking up, refilling their coffee, getting their drinks, or just getting the gunk out of your eyes, I want to make sure everyone understands the reason we do this show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and that is to show the world what a decentralized currency, what a decentralized technology, what Bitcoin can do. And again, if you're not aware, we have Operation Gabriel. We have Operation Gabriel going on right now. So it's where we have boots on the ground and we are directly helping people involved and affected by Hurricane Helene in North Carolina. We have Hunter right now, Satoshi guy, that's in North Carolina. That's helping everybody out. Through your generosity and support, we've been able to raise over $115,000. So huge thank you to everybody who helped us with that and spreading this message out. And so what we're doing with those funds is we're going out and we are helping everyone with, whether it be with food, with warm weather clothing, with heaters, with generators, with fuel. And so we're just trying to make sure that these people, these citizens, these everybody that's been affected is not forgot about. Again, as a society, we have a very short attention span. And I have to admit that myself I am included in that. I have a very short attention span. And so I want to make sure that these people know that they're not forgotten about. And it's going to be a long road before they get back on their feet, before they're able to get power back to a lot of these places. So we're going to make sure that we keep going out there and spreading this message. I want you all to tune in tonight to our Bitcoin video podcast that'll be held at 7 p.m. Eastern time, where we're going to have our guys talking about Operation Gabriel and what they experienced and how we're doing and how we're making an impact for everybody involved. So that'll be live streamed on Twitter and X. Make sure you follow us on the Bitcoin Veterans channel for both spaces. And if you're able to help, volunteer, go out to North Carolina and help with the relief effort. Or if you know people with contacts who have feed for livestock, who have warm weather clothing, blankets, generators, heaters, please reach out to us and we can point you in the right direction where we can make a huge impact with everybody involved. So I want to give a couple quick shout outs to people I see in the audience. Again, we couldn't make this show possible without your support. So I see we have Randy in the audience, both Wades, AC, LBN. I see Bert, Martin, ZMAC. I want to say good morning to everybody. And Wade, if you want to come up here, if you're available, I'd like to get you to talk about Bitcoin Alaska. The website is officially up, so we'll have a link up here momentarily in the nest to point everybody in the right direction to get your lodging and your tickets for this conference. If you're not aware, we are going to have a Bitcoin Alaska conference July 5th and July 6th of next year, 2025. Highly recommend getting early, coming down on the 1st or the 2nd of July, and doing a lot of the pre-event activities. And then the event itself is on the 5th and 6th, and then staying a couple days after just to decompress and explore Juneau. This will be held in Juneau, Alaska, Lodging is going to be the biggest restriction just because it is a small coastal town. There are not a lot of hotels. So if you plan on going, I highly recommend booking your hotels early. And so I see we have Wade up here. Good morning, sir. Do you want to give us any new updates or just a quick recap of everything going on?
Good morning. Rather than touching on old points, on the family friendly side of things, just to talk a little bit about what we've got going on there. People are encouraging us to make sure we have something put together. Somebody else actually brought it up to me who wasn't aware that we were going to make it family friendly, and they're more interested in coming out than they were before. We're looking at getting a bus and trying to get people around to Mendenhall Glacier, the museum, Dipak Fish Hatchery for the wives and kids, and or you know, husbands and kids, whoever doesn't really want to attend the conference, while their spouse really does, just to give them something to do. Across the street from Centennial Hall is the ocean, and right there off Egan Drive. And we've got One People Canoe Society. They're going to be bringing up their canoes. It's a Native Alaska group that paddles around Southeast Alaska on canoes and just camps on the beaches. They've got these 15-man canoes that they're just going to be pulling in. People can hop on the canoes, paddle around the channel there, get out on the ocean, on the water, which is always beautiful. We've got the Gold Belt has a tram that goes up Mount Roberts, just probably a half mile away from the conference. So there's a lot of activities to do right downtown for families who don't necessarily want to take part in the conference. So definitely encourage people to bring their families. Of course, also the parade goes right through downtown. The fireworks will be downtown for the 4th of July. So that's always an event. So encourage people to really consider bringing their families, because that's this way they can get exposure to Bitcoin, get exposure to the conference, and also be bussed out from the conference when they need to get away and go do something else.
Yes, and Alaska is just amazing in the summertime. I can't stress that enough. It is just a beautiful place. It's a beautiful state, and I always find myself having a hard time getting back home after visiting Alaska, just because I don't want to leave, especially in the summer. The weather is amazing. It's just absolutely gorgeous. I've never been to Juneau myself, but from everything I've seen and I've heard, it looks amazing. So I am really looking forward to this conference. I'm extremely excited, and it is family friendly. So let's go ahead and start rolling into today's topics. Eomer, I'm going to get you to join in on this. And then we have a video I'd like to play. So Jacob, give me the thumbs up when you're ready. But Vanek, I'm not sure exactly what his role is at Vanek, but he went on Squawk Box yesterday morning and was talking about BRICS and just kind of some big news rolling out of there. So I'll go ahead and we'll play this short clip and we'll start dissecting everything that was discussed yesterday morning. So Jacob?
It's a non-US asset. It's an emerging markets asset. And while we were all hyperventilating about the election over the last week, BRICS had a conference in Russia. There's six new members of BRICS this year. So BRICS GDP is now greater than the combined GDP of G7. Of the six new members, three of them, Argentina, the UAE, and Ethiopia, are now mining Bitcoin with government resources. So there is tremendous urgency outside of the US to find a way to circumvent the irresponsible fiscal policy that we've been running here in the U.S. In fact, Russia announced an initiative there. Sovereign Wealth Fund is going to invest in a regional initiative to build Bitcoin mining and AI infrastructure throughout BRICS with an idea of settling global trade in Bitcoin. So look, someday, I don't know if it's 5 years, 10 years, Putin's going to die. We're going to look to reintegrate some of these countries into the world financial system, and they're going to be trading with Bitcoin. What are we going to be doing?
Okay. What? Yeah. Are you stunned?
No, I'm just processing.
You're processing?
Processing.
When will that be complete?
The processing?
Yes, so that you can make a comment.
When is Bitcoin going to be complete?
I have no idea. He sounds, what you think it's going to be, a $100,000 asset soon, 200,
Yes. You know, the smallest ever trough to peak rally for a Bitcoin cycle was 2,000%. If we do half of that, that'd be 1,000%. That'd be roughly 180,000.
When does this all go down? When does this happen?
When does it all happen?
I think after the election will be a significant catalyst. You can see it front page of the Wall Street Journal talking about debt and deficit concerns.
Right.
Like Moody's is telegraphing this. Right. They want to downgrade sovereigns who
where are you
who
compared
have 20
like Kathy Woods?
What's that?
Like Kathy Wood. Where
my old boss?
Yeah. How do you feel about her predictions?
I don't think about them very much.
I mean, do you think she's right? 500,000 is where she's at. By very soon.
We have a model that assumes that by 2050, this is very long term, that Bitcoin becomes a reserve asset that's used in global trade and held by global central banks at a very modest 2% weight. And in that model, we arrive at a $3 million price target for Bitcoin. Now, that sounds, you know, extreme, but that's a 16% compound annual growth rate for a couple decades. You know, that's not really that extreme. So into the millions over the medium term is a high conviction call.
So a lot to digest there. But the biggest takeaway I took was at the beginning part of that clip where he said, Russia announced an initiative where a sovereign wealth fund is going to invest a regional initiative to build Bitcoin mining and AI infrastructure throughout the BRICS with an idea of settling global trade in Bitcoin. So I threw the link up in the nest of the video we just played, and then also of Jason Lowry this morning posting on that exact clip where he said, BRICS nations are standing up hash wars. How long will it take for the U.S. to recognize what is happening and respond? So Eomar, Bob and Kirk, Wade, if you guys want to give your thoughts on this and just kind of the significance of what he was mentioning in this clip.
I think the best part of this for me is the bewilderment of Andrew Ross Sorkin. I mean, he's been such a naysayer on Bitcoin, and he is just bewildered. He cannot comprehend that the stupidity of Russia and the BRICS adopting Bitcoin. He's just beside himself, and it's absolutely hilarious.
Why do you think he is? He just refuses to change his stance.
I almost think it's like a Peter Schiff thing. We need, just like every great hero movie, you need the anti-hero. And that's what he's providing. One thing that I do think is interesting, though, as well, is that, you know, he can't really say anything because this is just facts that are being presented, whereas the rest of the mainstream media is not based on any facts. And so I just think CNBC is actually becoming more of a fun thing to watch, or at least these clips, I think.
Eomar, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I just think, to me, it's kind of funny that we still try to project the price in dollars, because like if like global trade starts settling in Bitcoin, I don't know how we would be able to project out the effects that would have on the dollar, like the dollar Bitcoin exchange rate. You know what I mean? Like the inflation, like our inflationary like methods of handling our debt would not function the way they function right now, you know? So it would be pretty catastrophic. So even like 3 million sounds ridiculous, but if we got to the point where like, you know, if BRICS really decide like, hey, like this is what we're doing, which I agree. I think it's like, you know, I wrote about it back in January that I think that's an alternative. You know, if they go that route, then, you know, I think it's hard to predict the price that Bitcoin would be at. The only thing that upsets me is that I don't have as much money as I wish I had to buy more Bitcoin right now. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting to see the thing, like, to see countries coming out and saying like, you know, we're using our assets to do it. If you think of this in terms of like what's best, like if you're Russia, are you going to come out and say like you're mining Bitcoin now and you're creating a Bitcoin reserve? Like, absolutely not. They're going to hold on to that until the last possible minute, right? There's no benefit to them leaking that information at any point until they're like done accumulating as much Bitcoin as they want, which, you know, in theory that won't happen. Like there won't be a point. Like if this is your plan, you're not going to tell people this is your plan. You're just going to keep stacking Bitcoin, and eventually like it'll come out, and that's when you make the switch. So I think that's another thing that's important to note. Like I don't see like a reason why they would tell us or tell the world that they're doing it until like it's found out, basically, you know.
Do you think that is why they're putting not so much FUD, but they're having a lot of discussions of trying to decide which currency that they want to use or how they want to back this currency amongst the BRICS? Do you think that's why there's discussions and news articles being released about it? Because they don't want to put the spotlight that they're seriously considering using Bitcoin?
Well, I think those discussions would have to be had regardless. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they can just wave a hand and say, this is what we're going to do. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, you can have the discussions and still kind of have like the solution in mind when you start talking about it, right? Like, be like I said, you would probably hold that close to your chest for a while. And I'd imagine like they would continue to do like different methods. Like, I think like the whole like China ban thing that happened a few years back is just kind of like lawfare to try to seize Bitcoin. And, you know, the United States does the same thing with, you know, the same thing with like Silk Road. And I don't know if we were able to salvage anything out of, what was the Sam Bankman-Fried one?
FTX?
FTX, yeah. I don't know if we salvaged any Bitcoin out of that thing. But I feel like, you know, the like clandestine way for nations to accumulate it would just be like through lawfare and like go after anybody they can get hold of and seize their Bitcoin and say, oh, well, they were breaking the law, so this is ours now. We're just going to hold on to it till we sell it. And then they'll just, you know, keep it holding on to it. That would be like my guess. I think it's easier for some of these countries to kind of clandestinely like mine stuff. I don't know if the United States would be able to do it that well. But you know, if you are in a like more authoritarian state, you know, you can kind of just wave your hand and get it done and not have to really tell anybody about it. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
How does he know, though? Because we're not hearing anything outside of what he said during this speech, but how does he know that they're talking about settling trade in Bitcoin and the sovereign wealth fund getting involved? How do you think that's getting speculated? Or does he have just knowledge through back-end connections?
I don't know the answer to that.
I think he's just putting two and two together. If you've seen anything coming out of the BRICS, I mean, they've already floated the idea that they want to back any type of regional base currency out of that comes out of this by commodities and, you know, a logical step, especially considering Russia's allowing their citizens to mine Bitcoin, would be to have a non-sovereign currency in the mix of those baskets of commodities. And so Bitcoin fits that bill, and I think it just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a reformed crayon eater, and I can come to that conclusion. So I'm sure you know, the smarter people that do this for a living can kind of see through the noise there too. So I'm just going to post a screenshot and a link to this article I wrote. And like it was based off of like my conclusion was based off of a study from the American Institute for Economic Research. And they were basically saying why a BRICS currency is non-viable. And it was, their argument was basically that they all depreciate faster than the dollar. And then if you look at like the graph, so that's the first graph, right? And then if you look at the second graph, that's when you add Bitcoin into it. And then like when you get into like this, the whole like sovereignty aspects of it, you know, like I've talked about it a couple times before, but if they switch to something that's like a non-state currency, then they don't like I guess you could argue they give up some of their sovereignty, but they're not giving it up to another state, right? Like right now with the dollar back system, you have to give up sovereignty to the United States. And for countries that are our adversaries, just breaking that system is a win for them. So like, okay, like we're giving up the ruble, but we're destroying the dollar. So we'll take that trade and we'll do everything in Bitcoin. Like I have a hard time seeing the negative for them. You know, it's like it feels like something that just needs a little nudge, you know, like that little bricks nudge maybe to kind of break the system that's in place right now. And that's a huge victory for all of our adversaries, because it'll break the, you know, with the dollar, you know, with the Federal Reserve and the income tax and all that stuff came our ability to wage these endless wars and, you know, impose our will on the world. So for them, it's like a way for them to break that system without having to go to a hot conflict with us. And I think you guys mentioned that book, Soft War. I haven't read that, but maybe that's something kind of in line with what he was saying from what you guys spoke about there.
Yes, absolutely. And the only pushback I would have is that it would be detrimental to us if we didn't have a strategic Bitcoin reserve ourselves and had the means and the ability to go ahead and just use it alongside them. And I think that's really the only way it goes. And I agree, and that's why I wanted to get your opinions first. I think if you put all the puzzle pieces together, it paints a pretty clear picture that these countries are mining Bitcoin and that they are seriously looking at utilizing it for trade.
And I just want to point out too, I also like have the view that the United States is kind of short the dollar. You know, we have, at least on paper, the largest like Bitcoin reserves and large gold reserves. So we're kind of prepared for the end of the dollar. I got to step away for a second. I got a call coming in, but I'll be back in just a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so, and again, for people that don't know, about a year and a half ago, Jason Lowry was ordered by his superiors to remove his book Soft War from the selling market, so from Amazon and the other places you can get it. And currently, right now, on the second hand, it's retailing for over $300. So I do think that there are people in power, people in charge that are looking into this, and they do see it as something that's serious, and they want to just do a lot of research. So again, I do seriously considering taking on Bitcoin and using it for trade. And I don't think that they'll show their hand until they're ready to implement it. Good morning, Shane. It's good to see you back up here.
Good morning, guys. Really fascinating discussion you guys are having. I kind of just caught the tail end of that, but yeah, I know. Good to be back. Running around, we're doing a lot of stuff in the background with some changes and everything else. But the main mission for us over here is still helping these guys out in North Carolina. There's a lot going on. We're looking at providing some tiny homes for these guys to get back into, and obviously still the heat mission that we're working on. But lots of moving pieces, and really appreciate everybody's patience and us working everything through this. And we're going to have, a nice big update for you guys tonight on the show at 7 p.m. their Eastern time.
Excellent. It sounds like you're up there right now making runs, Shane.
No, not yet. Taking care of some errands for Bitcoin veterans right now and in the truck. So I'm probably going to drop down to listening because I don't want to be that guy that cuts in and out of the matrix. But you guys keep going. You guys got a great conversation going this morning.
Oh, thanks, Shane. And I really look forward to seeing the update and hearing you guys talk about it tonight. So again, if you missed that, it'll be live streamed here on X and on YouTube. So make sure you follow us on the handles, give us a like, subscribe to the page, and you'll get notified. And then make sure you share it with your friends. We don't get the message out what we're doing with Operation Gabriel. And again, showing the world that we don't need central authority to take over everything. We do a better job with decentralization and small groups just getting in and not having any red tape to jump over. But while I have all of your attention, I just want to give a quick thank you to all of our partners. Punchplate, I see all in the audience. Let's give a big thumbs up, fist pump for Punchplate. Definitely recommend getting a hardware wallet. With your hardware wallet comes a seed phrase. You need to stamp that seed phrase on a metal plate. So go check them out at punchplate.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. BrixBitcoin.com. So did anyone up here want to continue on with the Brix discussion and any additional thoughts or comments on that? Or did you want to move on to the next topic we have in line?
Coleman, maybe an adjacent kind of topic with the Brix is you have Elon Musk coming out and saying, you know, our tax dollars are being wasted. There's basically a financial emergency with this national debt. And so, you know, kind of circling back to what Yomar was saying about the U.S. being short the dollar, I think that's an interesting topic. And I don't know if he can pull on that thread. It sounded like he had a phone call, but that, you know, I think that could be debated, but it does make me think, you know, having these, you know, gold reserves, we're very rich in oil. I think that's an interesting thread to pull on, and maybe not. Oh, Yomar's back. Perfect.
Yeah. I got back. So like the reason I think of this, it's like when you look at like part of it comes from like, what's the strategic benefit to us not mining our own natural resources, right? And that's like the expendable ones, like gas and oil and stuff like that. The reason like you would want to hold on to that, or at least one of the reasons, would be that if you can get it for effectively free right now with funny money, it would behoove you to hold on to that until the funny money game is over, and then you actually have to purchase things. Then you would. That's why you would want to hang on to those strategic and expendable resources. And then the other aspect of it is just the fact that like we have, at least on paper, I know people push back on this sometimes, but the largest gold reserves in the world. You know, you can argue whether they're there or not, but on paper we have them. And I think, you know, there's been like documentation of them, of us like taking them from other nations to specifically like Iraq and stuff like that. So in terms of Bitcoin, like we have at least we did for a time. I don't know if we still do, but the largest Bitcoin reserves for a nation, we have that as well. And that's not looking at like the individual ownership, but I think a pretty high percentage of the Americans own some Bitcoin at least. So to me, that like from at the nation level, like, you know, maybe it's a little hyperbolic to say we're short the dollar, but if we were short the dollar, you know, if you're a Bitcoin maxi, like in, you know, I remember, I don't know if it happened this most recent one, but in like 2017, there's like people, you know, taking out loans on their house or maxing out their credit cards to buy Bitcoin because, you know, the idea was that, you know, the debt is cheap and like it's a cheap way to get Bitcoin. You know, what the U.S. does kind of follows that model, right? Like we're taking out all this debt and stuff, but we're holding on to these like hard assets and stuff. So that's why I say like, the U.S. kind of behaves at least like it's short the dollar. You know, we're using it to accumulate all of these things. We're using debt and inflation to accumulate all of these like hard assets. So that's where I get to that conclusion. I'm sure some people could like hash it out or, you know, get more in depth into it, but you know, that's my, my high level understanding and answer to it.
Well, and Yomar, I think, you know, your point's well taken that, we are obviously printing money and holding on to our reserves of things that, you know, we can't create. One thing that I guess it causes me to think about is that, you know, money is effectively like what we say it is, right? It's trust. And so that's why this BRICS story is so big, because we have to have the trust of not just our citizens to use dollars as money, but also the rest of the world. And so as that trust is broken and depleted, we can see what the repercussions are. And I think we can all see that Bitcoin is the inevitability.
And then just like the tax, like if you read through some of my articles, I constantly bash the carriers and how drones and missile technology kind of makes them, it basically destroys like the stated mission of them, in my opinion, like to basically float off, you know, and for example, the coast of Yemen and two operations there is like force rejection. I feel like they're not effective at that anymore. because of the fact that, you know, they can be overwhelmed by drone swarms or missiles or any of those like platforms that are relatively cheap and continuing to proliferate through the world. It makes it really hard for us to float them over places and use them. But I don't know how bad they would be at like extending our borders a little bit, right? Like if we get to the post-dollar world and, you know, we want to ensure that we are secure in our little continental island over here, you know, I could see them extending our borders a bit. So not so much, you know, going out and, you know, reaching out to touch someone, but making sure that they can't reach out to touch us. So like more of a defensive standpoint of a carrier. I think they're better suited maybe for that than they are for their current like stated purpose. So it just kind of like plays into my theory of, you know, preparing the U.S. preparing for the post dollar world.
I think that pulling that string a little further, and Tether just released its vaults and what they have as their reserves. So they said as of yesterday, they had 82,000 Bitcoin and 48 tons of gold to safeguard USDT. So that's $5.88 billion worth of Bitcoin and $4.26 billion worth of gold. And so my question for y'all is if the dollar declines, and we know that Tether kind of has a sweetheart deal with the United States government, do you think the government just kind of engulfs Tether and takes it over and uses that as a way to strengthen its reserves? Did I explain myself okay with that, with the question?
Yeah, I guess the way I think about it is Tether is strange bedfellow for the United States. I don't think they take them over. I think they enjoy, strangely enough, that Tether is a huge purchaser of U.S. treasuries, and they're filling a need in the market, and it suits Tether well as well. And so I guess I'm not sure that the U.S. cares enough to take that over right now, versus just using Tether to, and I don't want to say using them, but sanctioning them from, just making sure people aren't using the Tether to, finance terrorism, you know, be sent to sanctioned nations, so on and so forth. So I think it's more of, they're, let them operate, let them continue to buy our treasuries, and let's make sure, you know, the network isn't being used for purposes that are against the United States.
I think I agree with you. I do think that they utilize them just to kind of continue on this ploy and just issuing debt and getting to buy everything up. Just allow them to continue their game. Gilmore, do you have anything you want to add to that or no?
No, that pretty much covers it. I don't really know enough about Tether. I should probably look more into Tether to see the relationship. But in terms of like the U.S. using like institutional things to like accumulate Bitcoin or gold or something, like I could see it. I mean, we force everybody to sell their gold to the government and, you know, rob them of half their value in like 2 weeks. I forget what year that was, but so like I wouldn't put it past the government to do any kind of shenanigans when push comes to shove, which is why you should, you know, have your own coin or have your own keys and, you know, keep it on a, I see punch plate down there, so I'll use this to plug punch plate, but keep it on something metal and, you know, don't trust some third party to hold your stuff there.
I think I heard it was Luke Grohman speaking about this on a recent podcast he did. And he said the only reason they were legally allowed to confiscate the gold is because it was considered a currency of the United States, and that they wouldn't be able to do that again today because gold and Bitcoin are not recognized as legal currency in the United States.
I mean, what would that take to change, though, like a law, right? If you just said, like, okay, guess what, like, the dollar's dead, Bitcoin's the currency now, so we're going to have to confiscate, you know, for legal purposes, we're going to confiscate all the Bitcoin in you know, these 401ks and this and that, and you're going to get like this, you know, equivalent piece of paper that says that, you know, you own this, but we're going to hold on to it, you know, like, so I think there's like, you know, legal shenanigans the government can try to do to take it from institutions. I don't think they'll be able to do it from individuals. And that's kind of the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah. And I think the way that this has been done, the confiscation, and I don't want to say it exactly like confiscation, but I mean, you know, a lot of people would argue that the ETFs are actually, you know, just institutionalizing Bitcoin is the best way to confiscate it. And it's not a direct confiscation. It's just now it's all under the control and sightlines of whoever needs to see it, right?
So the reason that they would confiscate it then is just to back the reserves, correct? That would be the reason for not to.
Yeah, and like the other question is, do they even have to, right? Like if you own to Bob's point there, do they have to, right? Like these companies are so intertwined with the federal government and like the Federal Reserve that like, okay, like it's owned by a private company, but are they ever going to do anything against the United States of America? I doubt it. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of hand in hand there. So, you know, when the US government did the too big to fail thing, I think we kind of dropped the veil there on the separation between these institutions and the government. So I don't know if they have to actually force it where they kind of have it in place already. You know, it's basically like they just want to make sure, you know, at one level, I guess they would be satisfied making sure it's off the market for foreign adversaries, right? So not necessarily that they have to own it, but they want to make sure that Russia doesn't own it and China doesn't own it. But as long as it's held by some U.S. entity, that's pretty good for us, you know?
And, you know, as we circle back to Tether and the U.S. government just taking it over, you know, I think there's a reason that Tether is domiciled in Switzerland, right? The whole key for Switzerland is they're the neutral party and they're not going to let, despite the fact the U.S. has outsized influence across the world, especially with the dollar, they're not going to, jeopardize their status in the world as the neutral party. So I think Tether has a little bit of a moat built around them. And like I said before, the U.S. government enjoys that they're, as of last reports, from what I've seen, the 18th largest purchaser of U.S. treasuries. I think it really does come back to just making sure that that network, those rails, are not being used to to support whatever it is that we're against, right? Terrorism or whatever is against U.S. interests. So I think Tether is cooperating as a good soldier, and maybe that is with some influence from the Swiss government or Swiss regulators. But I do think that the likelihood of the U.S. just saying, "Hey, Tether, now you're part of us, like we own you," would be extremely unlikely at this point in time.
Interesting. Did you guys have anything else you want to hit on this? I have something that kind of falls in line with what we're discussing, so I'll just roll into it and we can always hop back. But Ripple CEO Brad Garlinghouse just admitted that he lost his bank account after 25 years banking with them. He was given 5 days to withdraw his funds. He said on a CNBC interview that he's personally been debanked. I got a call from one of the major banking institutions I had an account for 25 years, and they said, "You have 5 days to remove your money." So it's very interesting. And again, I think it kind of falls into play. What we're talking about here is that if you hold your Bitcoin in these ETFs, or you're not, even with a custodian, whether it be Strike or River or anything like this, I still don't trust them enough that they couldn't have your Bitcoin confiscated. So it's extremely important that you hold your own keys in a hardware wallet that you only control or family members have.
Yeah, and not just coming from banking, like maybe just for some perspective, like not to defend these financial institutions, but I mean, when you look at it, I mean, they have regulators who have offices inside their companies. And so a lot of these, especially the large banks, are subject to a call or a meeting from a guy down the hall who doesn't even work at your same organization, who can say, you know, this is too risky. Like, what you guys are doing is too risky, or this individual customer is too risky for the bank or for our financial system. And so they can, and I'm not saying this happened specifically with Brad Garlinghouse, but what I am saying is they can make, they have undue influence, let's put it that way. And they can just, or say, like, these accounts, anybody with this accounts that we've scanned that came up on this list, you need to start running those off in one way or another. So just for some perspective, I don't know that Brad Garlinghouse was individually targeted. He could have been a part of, you know, Citi's risk model where he just showed up. But it's also possible that he was targeted just based on the things that have gone on with Ripple and, you know, the SEC lawsuit and the back and forth and the appeals and the ongoing issues with that. Certainly could be part of it. So I just wanted to give a little bit of perspective there, because I think it's important for people to understand the mechanics of how, especially these very large banks in the United States, are under the thumb of regulators who, again, aren't just some bureaucrats sitting, you know, in Washington and make a call up to New York. They literally have offices inside of the bank and are in close communications all the time with these financial institutions and their leadership to help them make decisions to protect the U.S. financial system, but also to make sure that these banks are, you know, operating efficiently and without the risks that they see present in the system.
Yeah, and to your point, like, there are certain, I don't know for the big banks, but I know for like some smaller community, like I bank usually with a smaller bank and they would not touch. I had like a mining company, an LLC, they would not touch it. They weren't allowed to, anybody that whose like income, even like partial income, was from like Bitcoin related activities, like they were not allowed to bank them. So,
and Yomar, the big reason for that is, a lot of times, and I work with specifically community banks, the big reason for that is because of the cost of adding systems to monitor the activities for those types of accounts. So I would say, number one, they don't understand it. And number two, they're just too small and their scale is too small to afford the systems that would be required for the regulators to allow them to allow you to bank there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, you know, like if we're looking at it from their perspective, it's like, okay, like you're telling me you're getting it from mining, but how do I know this? Like, am I going to trace that all back? Am I going to track it down and make sure you're getting it from mining and you're not getting it from some illicit activity, which would put them in violation of all these other like stipulations and stuff like that. So like, I get it. It's annoying. But fortunately, like if you are trying to run a Bitcoin mining company, you can pretty much do it all in a bank and just operate.
Make a statement here. I'm trying for a big LLC for the conference. State Farm won't for anything having to do with Bitcoin at all. So just by having even see was a conference, they won't touch it. So it wouldn't shock me if some banks just won't do business in the industry.
And that was the go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, and there again, you know, I mean, State Farm is obviously big enough to have the systems in place, but the problem is that they don't, like, their actuaries don't know how to risk it. And so they, again, just said, like, hey, this is clearly something to do with Bitcoin. There's far too much risk. We just have a policy internally because we don't know how to, you know, put a price on it that. And I don't mean Bitcoin. I mean a price on the risk related to any Bitcoin type entity. Stay out of that business. And so I think you start realizing, like, individuals and maybe, you know, small businesses, that these institutions are not bad. They're just still so new, and they just don't have a way to stand the risk. So you and I, like all of us on this space, we are obviously, because we're interested in Bitcoin, or we own Bitcoin, or we've been accumulating it, or we've started Bitcoin businesses, like we're super, like we don't care about, we're not as scared about the risk side of things. But these institutions, as much as they want to make money, they also have to have the risk side of the equation calculated in. And so when they start looking at risks, a lot of times the answer is just, hey, it's way easier to just say, we have a policy, we're too big, like this is just a no for us. And so again, I don't want to make these guys out to be bad guys, because they're not. Eventually they're going to be our friends. But in the meantime, it's hard for us to see, like when we don't understand the inner workings, we're just like, oh, you know, State Farm's bad because they have this policy. Well, yes, but they're also in a business to make money. And part of their calculation in making money is, what's the risk? And if they can't assess it, or they don't know how to assign a price to it, they're just going to have this policy. And so they're not necessarily bad. They just can't figure it out in their risk models yet.
If you had to guesstimate, just a guesstimation, how quickly do you think the view on this changes with regulators, with banks, just with Bitcoin and the industry specifically? How quick do you think they start changing?
I think it's going to change. Sorry, Bob, if you want to go first, you can go.
No, go ahead. I have some ideas. I'm sure I'm coming at it from a much different direction than you. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
Sure. I think it's going to change with the like the bigger companies in the United States, specifically like the AI driven ones. I think that they're going to kind of force the hands of these other smaller companies to kind of be okay with Bitcoin, because I really do think it's going to be part of the model for how they minimize their downtime losses for like their AI and data centers and stuff like that. Especially if they get all of these like nuclear reactors and stuff online, I think that's going to kind of force the hand, because they're going to be like, listen, we have these Bitcoin miners in our data centers. They're just running, you know, they'll make the arguments because they want to make money too, you know, so they'll say like, they're just running, you know, computer hardware, like leave them alone, like insure them on our site so that we're not at risk. And I think it'll kind of force the hands there. And it'll be such big contracts that these companies will figure it out, because right now, me with my like tiny mining thing, like nobody cares, you know what I mean? Like they're not making money off of it. They don't really, you know, like a pittance off of it. So it's not worth it to them. But once it's worth it, once you have these huge companies that are engaged in that activity or adjacent activity, they'll be forced to, you know, accommodate.
I 100% agree with that. And I think it does come down to volume. So you got to look at it from this standpoint. Let's say I'm a real estate developer and I have 1,000 properties in Florida. Right. And there's some insurance companies who will not insure Florida, like a Florida property, because of all of the, you know, catastrophes that we've had and all the risk. Right. But if I come to an insurance company and say, hey, I have 1,000 properties, would you take me on? They might consider it just based on volume. Right. Because they can see all of those. They can plot out all of those properties. And so, you know, we don't have to look at it only from insurance, but Yomar, your point's well taken. I think that it's all about the requests that are coming in and the volume of what a company could make off of taking this on. So I think, like you said, a bank, it just doesn't care about your, you know, little mining prop company. They will care about, you know, far larger, where they can, you know, make money on the risk. And so, I think that's coming. And, you know, for miners out there, it might be wise to find out, make some friends at mining companies and find out from them, you know, where do you bank? Where do you have insurance through? Because if they already have that risk taken on by those institutions, it's likely if you're in that same business, you're going to be able to add on. So that's what I would say about it.
Do you think Saylor steps in and fills this void then? With banking to the industry? He's mentioned that he wants to be a Bitcoin financial institution.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that looks like. I think presumably it'd be a Bitcoin bank. And, you know, I think right now a lot of people's needs are related to the existing financial system, right? Bridging Bitcoin into the existing financial system. So I'm not sure. I don't think he has interest in providing, you know, traditional financial services just based on the activities of his company. He's completely arbitraging the entire system. So maybe he would provide financial services, but that, I mean, traditional financial services, but that would be a stretch based on what it would take for him to convert that company over. And again, keeping in mind his stated goal of just, you know, full on Bitcoin accumulation. I think there's seasons to every business, so it could come, you know, in the far future. But for right now, he's just issuing debt and using the proceeds to buy more and more Bitcoin.
Anybody else have anything they want to add to that? So we're getting to the top of the hour. We'll just go over a quick thing here. I was reading it this morning. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I hate shitcoins. I hate everything they're about. And reading this press release coming from them really made me mad, but still want to cover it. Cardano is creating a new layer two to be placed on Bitcoin. And to quote them, a new wave of investors will be searching a way to ride Bitcoin's wave. And they won't just want to buy Bitcoin. They're going to want other assets with seemingly higher potential for growth. Sleeping giants that integrate with us will be awakened. In this context, Cardano will offer exposure to Bitcoin's era of rebirth, in which Cardano will play a leading role.
I have a fun story about Cardano. A buddy of mine was holding on to it, and there's one of those like scammers, the shitcoin scammers on YouTube, and he was like, oh, like September it's going to go up to like $10. And I kept asking him, why is it going up to $10? And he said, it's going to go up to $10. I keep saying it. And this is when it was at like $3. And this was, I actually took a dip into shitcoining at this time. I got in at like one and I sold it at like three, and I was like, oh, you should sell it, like triple your money, more than triple, because he got in earlier than me. And he's like, no, it's going to $10. And he just held on to it. And I think he still has it, or he might have sold it after it like crashed completely. But the moral of the story is, don't shitcoin. And if you do a tiny, tiny amount, and just consider it a gamble that you're going to lose, because you know, shitcoining is not good for you. I think this is just Cardano trying to be relevant, because they're not.
Yeah, that's 100%. That's what it is. It's them trying to be relevant. And sorry, Bob, go on. I don't want to talk over you.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I think, they're just trying to reinvent themselves. What I think maybe we should consider, just as Bitcoiners, and I heard this in another space, is stop referring to all coins as shit coins and just refer to them as R&D coins. Because, I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to do, right? So these are just not serious, not monetary instruments whatsoever. They're just trying to build rails. And clearly, he's capitulated from the standpoint of, hey, we're going to build this with Bitcoin. So I think it's just, these are R&D coins, and they're just not for serious people. So have fun.
I think at best they're R&D coins, right? If they're good actors, they're trying to do some research and development and come up with something useful. But a lot of times that's not their goal. The goal is just to, you know, fleece people and get some money. You know, that's my take on it, at least. And like just the actions of like the YouTube community around these coins kind of reinforces that belief for me. You know, just a lot of people trying to get their bags off of, you know, poor unsuspecting people, and, you know, people trying to get a jump start. Like maybe they've recognized Bitcoin and they think, oh, well, Bitcoin's gonna too highs. You know, there's the, I forget what it's called. There's some sort of like financial term for it where you think like the unit cost is too high, so you'll buy something cheaper. Maybe it'll be better, but,
yep. Know, unit bias. Exactly. That's why we need maybe to shift to SaaS at some point, right? Instead of hold Bitcoin. We're not there yet, but I think that'll be interesting. Wade, go ahead.
Yeah, the article should read something more like, we never provided any value, but Bitcoin provided value. So give us money because
we're going to stamp Bitcoin on our logo.
Essentially, that's what the art, when you read the article, it's really long. I posted it up in the Nest. That's essentially what they're saying. They're just trying to ride the coattails of Bitcoin and just making empty promises. And it's stupid. It's really frustrating. Again, I hate shit coins, but take that 10, 15 minutes and read this article just so you can hate them a little bit more. I'm talking about this.
Yeah, you know, it's down to the fact that people will come into this market and want to gamble. I think it has to do with, obviously, people are hurting. Their purchasing power of the dollar has gone down, so they're willing to take undue risk to try to catch up. And the real issue is that, obviously, you know, there are some dollar gains to be had, but you're buying less and less Bitcoin with whatever shit coins you're putting. Bitcoin will outpace all of them over time. And I think that's just something that we as a community are going to have to continue to battle, right? We're going to have to educate. We might have to change our terminology a little bit so that the outside world isn't put off by us simply dismissing things as scams when they've watched 3 hours of videos on how this is going to be the next, you know, big thing. And that's how they're going to be able to, you know, drive their Lambo and all that stuff. I think we might have to get a little bit more creative about how we, as the Bitcoin marketing department, approach the normies. And so, yeah, this has always been a problem since altcoins or shitcoins or R&D coins have been in existence. But we'll have to maybe shift and adjust as this gets more mature.
Absolutely, and that's a perfect way to end this out, Bob. Is when you're in this system where the dollar is just collapsing and you're struggling every day. People are working two or three jobs just to make ends meet. You look at the price of Bitcoin, and you're like, I can't afford. What is it at right now? 71K. I can't afford that. And so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to buy this shit coin that's a lot cheaper, that has potentially, quote unquote, a higher possibility of netting me more. So you just start gambling your money away. And in the end, you end up losing more. And so we need to definitely stress this, and we need to show everybody what Bitcoin does and why it's different from everything else and why it really is the only solution out of this system. Get off the hamster wheel and start slow and just slowly accumulate. Go ahead, Yomar.
I just want to reinforce that. Like, don't underestimate like a humble DCA, you know, like you'll have more and more Bitcoin. Like, you know, set yourself, if you want to set yourself like tangible goals, you know, say like, okay, I want to get to, you know, 5% of Bitcoin, then 10%, then 25%, you know, just work your way up slowly. You know, don't underestimate it. For some context too, like, I just did like a quick Google search. There's an estimated 59.4 million millionaires worldwide. So there will never be, there's only going to be at most, there could be 21 million, you know, Bitcoin whole coiners. So, and that's not counting like all these, we talked about like nation states and MicroStrategy that hold all these coins themselves, and like all the coins that have been lost and stuff. So the point is, like, owning a fraction of a Bitcoin, if we do ever get to the, which I think we will, if we get to the Bitcoin standard economy, you know, owning a fraction of it will put you ahead of, you know, where the millionaires are today. So that's my my advocacy for DCA.
Yeah, and that's perfect. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up right there. It's a slow game. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon, and just a little bit every day. So I want to thank everybody who tuned in, everybody who joined us, Yomar, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Shane, everybody in the audience. There's so many of you. I can't name you all, but I really do appreciate everybody who's listening and consistently listening to us. I really appreciate that. So don't forget to tune in tonight to our video podcast with the Bitcoin Veterans. We'll be hosting that live. It'll be an update with Operation Gabriel. And so I'm really looking forward to that. It starts at 7 p.m. Eastern time, live streamed on YouTube and X. So make sure you're following both and give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. So join us tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Wednesday. This week is flying by. We're doing it again at 10 a.m. try and bring a guest up here to talk a little bit of this price action. I think I'm looking forward to it. I like the price when it goes up. It's fun. It's a good talking point, and it makes it easier to help Orange Pill people to our cause. So get out there, talk about Bitcoin, show them that it's the way out of this system and to get off that hamster wheel. And just remind everybody, do not shitcoin. This is like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.